Yeah. Okay, then welcome to you all and good morning on the third day of the second Linux Audio Conference. And this is the number one developer of ADOR, the digital hard disk recording system, Paul Davis. Some of you might heard of him last year when he showed what he could do until then. And of course, several things have happened in the past. Before Paul begins, a few short notes about today. So this is a single track only in this room. After this, we have again a parallel track in this room and in the lecture hall just across the floor. Today, our talks will last until 5 p.m. Then we have 1 hour of dinner break until 6. At 6 p.m., we have in the Kubus again some technical demonstrations where developers will play some musical pieces and explain how they made them. That is concert number 2, as we call it. At 8 p.m., also in the Kubus, we have another concert, similar to the one on Thursday evening, with pieces by, Itzo Bukvic, and I forgot the other name, sorry for that. And then after that, at 10 p.m., we have the socialization phase, so out here, just in front of this room, we will have some music, somewhat composed by Linux people, intermixed with beer, talk, and whatever else. Yeah, I guess that's all. So I wish you all a very nice day and hand over the microphone now to Paul Davis.
I feel like I want to do some sort of Apple presentation where I run out on stage and, you know, scream at this huge room. So welcome to Ardo. I don't know what happened there, but yeah, this all looks a little wrong. Okay, screen resolutions. Okay. ADOR is a digital audio workstation. What does that mean? It's a tool for manipulating digital audio data. It's not a sound file editor. It's not a sample editor. It's not a notation editor. Although, of course, really good digital audio workstations might include both of those things. What it does do is to let you record multiple simultaneous tracks. It lets you play back existing material while you're recording the old stuff. It lets you edit based on not just cutting up sound files, but manipulating meaningful chunks of audio data. This is in contrast to sort of simple sound file editors where you just cut and paste bits and pieces. And then there's something else on the bottom that can't be very important. The prehistory of ADOR, about 6 years ago, I started writing audio and MIDI applications. The first thing I wrote was a little MIDI fader box that wasn't a MIDI fader box because it was on your computer, called XFAT, which then led into a fairly ambitious project that I later abandoned called Quasimodo that some of you have heard of. And then in December of 1999, RME released the first version of the Hammerfall, and I thought, ooh, 26 channels of digital audio. I have to have it. Well, there was no driver for it, of course, so I wrote the driver and then sat back and thought, okay, what shall I do? Well, the first obvious idea was to create a tape recorder so you could record stuff coming in over these 26 channels of pristine 24-bit digital audio. And the initial goals focused on just really replacing digital tape systems like the Alesis and Tascams. And that was actually relatively easy to do. I think in 2 or 3 months, I was able to record 24 tracks simultaneously. I carried on working on the GUI and basically had what looked like a fairly useful program and quite an attractive one. The problem was you couldn't edit anything. You could just record all these tracks and then play them back, and you could instantly locate to wherever, but you couldn't change what you had recorded. And at the time, and in fact, to some extent, even today, you would have a very hard time finding any external program that would be able to edit what you'd recorded, because you could very easily record sound files that were a gigabyte long. They were recorded using floating point data. And most of the programs that we had for Linux at that point, and even most of them today, can't edit that kind of data. So in the intervening years that have gone by, how time flies when you're having fun. We've gone from ADOR being just basically a tape recorder to this sounds like marketing speak, doesn't it? full 24-bit multi-track recording system with non-linear, non-destructive, region-based editing, sample accurate gain, pan and plug-in parameter automation, and some limited support for controlling ADA in the ways that you generally expect to, MIDI timecode, MIDI machine control. I want to spend most of my presentation today trying to do a demo. I'm using up precious time already talking. But this is just a brief summary of the kinds of editor operations that we support right now. Before I do the demo, I just want to talk a little bit about the mixer design, because it's sort of one of the core elements of any digital audio workstation, and tends to limit what you can do with them, even if they have really cool editors. ADA's mixer design is intentionally meant to be as limitless as possible. There's no limit to the number of tracks. There's no limit to the number of buses. There obviously are limits on your particular computer system, but not in the code. And the idea is you can basically take a signal that comes into the program or is already recorded on disk and send it anywhere you want. All the mixer strips, we say strips in the sense of a conventional hardware fader that has, you know, channel strips, every single one of them terminates in a jack port, which means that the entire mixer is essentially open to the rest of the jack world. You can connect any jack application to any of the channel strips. And this opens up a lot of interesting possibilities. And there are also jack ports internally. And recently we added a master bus, which was something that I had avoided adding for a long time, just to make life easier for people. Most of the time when you work with a digital audio workstation, so you have a machine with stereo output, it's most likely you just want all of your tracks to go out to your main stereo output and have a big master fader you can control. And we didn't do that because it wasn't flexible, but it turns out that most people want this, and so we added it. Another important element is that we don't have any built-in EQ. Most digital audio workstations come with their own EQ built into the channel strip. They sometimes have other effects built in as well, and we decided to not do that. There are lots of good approaches to doing EQ, and we didn't want to pick any of them. We'd rather leave that to you guys. There's also no fixed number of plugins, inserts, or send slots in every track. You can essentially have any number that you want, and you can insert them pre or post fader. So just before we go on to some demonstrations, which will hopefully be more fun, do a quick survey of the actual mixer strip architecture. The audio flow here is starting at the top of the screen and going down to the bottom. We start with material that comes in through jack. If there's anybody in here that doesn't know what jack is, it's a system for sharing audio data between applications or an audio interface. Or we start with recorded material if we're playing back a track that we've already recorded. And then we come down through this whole stack of facilities. We have a polarity switch in case you had your mic wired incorrectly or had it pointing in the wrong direction. We have a solo button, a mute button, which can affect any of the areas with a red dot independently or together. We go into a section of what are called redirects. I hope the phrase redirect actually makes a little bit of sense, although most people don't use it because it's not used by any other program. The signal flow is going from top to bottom, and anything that takes it out of that flow we call a redirect. And we have three kinds of redirects. We have a plug-in insert, where the data goes out and back to some kind of plug-in. We can run LADSPAR or VST plugins there. We have port inserts, where the data goes out to a jack port and back, which means you can connect it to some other jack program. And we have sends, which also go to a jack port, and there's no return on those. The return presumably comes back some other way, or the signal does not return at all. An example would be if you were sending it out to, want this particular track to be sent over the Ethernet or something. Then we go through a metering section if you're doing pre-fader metering. We have gain control, the usual fader, which you'll see in a minute. Post-fader redirects, which is an exact duplication of the facilities were there for pre-fader redirects, but they happen after the fader. If you're doing post-fader metering, that happens next. And then optionally, in some situations, you actually want control room outs, This is a feature that I don't know any other digital audio workstations that do this. There seems to be an assumption that you only ever have main outs that you sit in front of, or somehow I only have one set of outputs, but in most recording studios, typically, well, not necessarily recording studios, but in many situations, you have a setup where the person who's running the mixer has their own set of loudspeakers, and they're independent from the loudspeakers that the main output is going to. And so Arda supports this model. And then, of course, we have the main outs, and both of these sets of outputs have panning controls, and then the data goes out to a set of jack ports. What's on the other side of the jack ports, we don't care. Arda doesn't have any idea that there's an audio interface in your computer. It doesn't know anything about what type of audio interface that you have. You can run Arda on a machine that has no sound card. You can run it on a machine that has 200 sound cards. We just send the data out to a jack port, and we hope it goes to the right place. So I will now see if I can actually run Arda on a machine where I can't see the screen properly. I'm actually really nervous about this. Let's start with a fairly simple section. I was up late last night. I forgot to take out a bunch of things. I'm sorry. Okay. This is our editor window, and this is a very simple session. Do we have a pointer? A little red laser pointer? Okay. Well, let me just start. I'm going to try to give a brief survey of sort of the features, and I'll try to demonstrate them as we go around. But we'll just sort of survey the landscape here. Near the very top of the window, over on the upper left-hand side, we have a set of transport controls, which are the usual sorts of things that you've seen on anything, really. We can press the play button. We'll start to get some sound. And we can stop it. We can jump back to the beginning of the session. We can jump to the end of the session, and so on. We also have a wonderful little scrub transport control here, which we call a shuttle. Which lets us control the speed going back and forth. That actually operates over pretty much any number of tracks and lets you go up to 4 times regular speed. So you can jump around and scrub around in the track to find material that you're looking for. It's not really a substitute for fast forwarding, but it does let you work on material that you need to. We have 2 clocks up here. These are called the main transport clocks. They're currently displaying 2 different time modes. One of them is in SMPTE time, this one right here. And then we have the one next to it, which is showing fractional. It's showing music time in bar beats and ticks. We've then got a series of transport controls. This one up here, punch in and punch out, allow us to do auto punching, which I'm not going to show, but you can set up a particular range of time that you wish to record into. Auto input is inherited from various tape decks, and it's a very useful feature, but it's way too complicated to explain to anybody. Auto return is a little handy feature, which if we stop in a particular place and we start playing again, whenever we stop, it jumps back to wherever we last played. You could call it poor man's looping. We'll show real looping in a minute. Autoplay is a little feature that allows us to say whenever we do a locate to a new location in the session we're working with. Oops, I'm sorry. I didn't turn it on. Whenever we locate, start playing. It's just a time saver, really. I don't know why I didn't do it that time. Because it's hung. This is why I was nervous. Nobody saw that, right? I did not want to demo this. Okay. Start up again. Okay. Okay, so yeah, reset the right button. I can't see the whole screen. That's the problem. Okay, so we have a couple more clocks up here, which I might get to in a moment, but I suspect not. We have up here is the Rood solo light, inherited from the Mackie desks. If you ever solo a track, the Rood solo button begins to flash. The idea of this is that even if you solo something that is no longer visible on the screen, so you can't actually see the solo button on, you always know that it's soloing. Likewise, we have an audition button. If we click on this, which of course we can't hear now because it's probably not set up correctly, it will flash to tell us that we're auditioning something. That should have played a piece of music at that point. And it's not wonderful. Okay. So those are just basically two alert buttons. You can also do tear off these whole strips by just coming up here, and you now have the whole thing as a separate window, which you can take and move around and do whatever you want with. And when you're done with that, you can go and reinsert it back in the main area. Next level down, we have a series of editor controls. These are not connected with transport, they're connected with editing. We have an edit cursor position. There's a blue line right here, which is often the point in a session where certain editing operations will happen. And this clock over here tells you where it is. Just to demonstrate that all the clocks have a common interface where you can right-click on them and change what units the time is in. So we can have audio frames, we can switch it to minutes and seconds, back to Synthi time or whatever we want. All the clocks function that way. We can zoom. This is not a good day, is it? I should have stayed in bed. I'm not going to demonstrate zooming anymore. I'm not going to demonstrate zooming anymore. I wanted to. So we can zoom in and out. There's a button right here that allows us to zoom to the whole session, the whole length, so everything fits in the window. We can zoom in and out with these buttons instead of working here, but you can also zoom with the mouse in the region. Zoom focus is a very nice control that just lets you say, when I'm zooming, what do I want to remain visible? We have several choices. You can say, I want the left edge to stay constant, the right edge to stay constant, I want the center to stay constant, or I want to stay so that the playhead stays in the middle, or the edit cursor. Snap mode. Now let me just bring in a few things here. I wanted to go ahead and delete some files. Let me turn on splice mode. So now I'm just pasting in some audio from why can I not hear anything? Oh, it is there, isn't it? I'm sorry, I turned it down. Okay. It's just too quiet. Oh, God. I'm really sorry about this. The program has been through a lot of changes in the last couple of weeks, and I wanted to demo some of the new things that we've done, and unfortunately, it's not back to the stability that it was in, you know, a month ago. Let's get rid of this again. So this is just bringing in samples we had over here. At the moment, we're in an edit mode that's called slide. Whoops, no, we're not. We're in edit mode called slide, which means we can move objects around completely freely. If you're like Orm and you don't really like to compose to any kind of fixed grid or have any sense of being limited by traditional Western music, you can get rid of the measure lines completely and you just essentially have a completely free-form canvas to position regions on. But sometimes that's not what you want and you'd actually like to have things all snapped together. And with this, whenever you move things around, they'll stay stuck together. If we go back to the options editor and turn the measure lines back on, we can now see snap to mode. We can say I want to snap to bars. Let's just leave it in slide. Now when I drag the regions, when I drag the regions around, you can see more easily in this mode. I hope you can see that they sort of only line up to the bars that we have there. Well, how do you actually make sure that these are in the right place? In this session, by default, we don't have them visible, but we can pop up a meter track and a tempo track. We can change the meter to, where'd it go? Anybody see my meter window? Oh, I just got rid of it, I'm sorry. There we go. We can change this to be in 6/8 time. And if you look up at that track now, you'll see there's a little 6/8 here. Otter also supports fractional beats per bar for those of you who are into whacked out music. If you want 9.5 beats per bar and you want a denominator of 93rd notes as the time signature, then you can do that too. Likewise, there's a tempo button as well, so you can just go in here, wrong place, and change the tempo to 68.3. beats per minute. And now you'll see that the measure lines are spaced out. We're still in snap to mode, so everything moves around to line up with the measure lines that we had. So just again to demonstrate sort of basic region editing operations, these are not very long. Let me just paste this guy in again. Here we have a fairly long region. Paste it over the whole thing. We can turn off snap mode. No, I don't want to turn it off. I want to snap to nothing. There's a whole list of things you can snap to, various subdivisions of the bars. You can also snap to the beginning and ends of other regions so that you can get regions neatly aligned. You can also snap to marks that you put up here in the rulers. So anyway, we can come to a region, we can trim it. You can see I'm just trimming the end of this down. We can position the edit cursor somewhere, and then we can I can't see the menu, please. There we go. We can split the region in two. We now have two regions. We can also copy a region down over here, copy it again, and so on. Sometimes when you overlap two regions, and this is going to be a very poor example because let me just see if I can do a better example. Let's see. Yeah, I know. That doesn't matter for the purposes of this. I think I have this turned off. Let me just see. Crossfades. Okay. We have reasonably nice handling for crossfades. If you've got two chunks of music in a track and you want to edit them so that they overlap and crossfade into each other, we can turn on automatic crossfades, and we can also globally turn them all on. And now, if we ever do an edit which overlaps two things, we get a little crossfade in here. See, hopefully, I don't know if you guys can see it from where you are, but there's two little fades in there. Let me just make the track bigger. You can maybe see it a little better. If I zoom out, you'll be able to see it, but then the program will crash. So if we come down to edit fade, we get a little crossfade editor. We can edit the fade in or the fade outside. We can take the control points, drag them around. we can listen to, let's have a listen to the whole thing. Maybe that's why we're not hearing the auditions. That's right. I think the audition ports are not connected. Because of time, I'm not going to make that work. But anyway, we have a series of buttons down here to, you can listen to just the output without the fade, the out fade, the whole fade, the in fade, or the in signal without the fade applied. And we have a bunch of preset shapes here, which we really need somebody to redo who knows how to do graphics, because I don't. If anybody can actually see the difference between this one and this one, then please let me know. They are different. For instance, that's one shape, that's the other shape. Or this one, or this one, or this one. And we can go over and do the right-hand side, change the shapes over there, so on. So we can edit crossfades and get nice fades if we... I blame it on the VST plugins, okay? It's their fault. Come on. Pardon? Is that one that's active? Oh yeah, so there is. Let's turn it off. That might be the problem, but who knows? Okay, let's go back to the editor again. So, as I said, we can vary track heights. If you need more detail on something, let's stop this from eating us alive. So I want to just demonstrate here. We've done shuttling. To go back to the rulers a minute, we have this nice looping facility now. We go back up to the transport button and press the loop. There are other ways of making a loop. I'm just sort of trying to demonstrate this. It's also seamless looping. This is work that Jesse did recently that means that although we don't guarantee that you have no clicks at the ends, there's no stop, there's no break in the audio while it plays. Ever, yeah. And you can arbitrarily change the loop lengths while we're playing. And so forth. Pun? Oh, you don't think it's turned on? Okay. You can play around with loops, you know, dynamically without having to stop the transport. You can modify loop lengths and so forth. And of course, this is quite useful for a number of things. A couple of other features that I know some people I talk to in the industry find very handy. If we go up to this clock over here, which is the nudge clock, and we set this to 1 second, we come down and select this region, so it's selected, we can actually nudge it forward by very precise amounts. And I know for some people that are doing things more like post work for film editing and stuff, this kind of ability to move things around very precisely is more useful to them than having this general canvas. So we can nudge arbitrary things. If we select multiple regions, by the way, then we can move them all together, including things in different tracks as well. So it works quite nicely. Let me see, very few minutes left. I'm going to go over to the mixer. Let's see if we can shrink this down and make it slightly more maximized. Yeah, it was sized for a different session and it hasn't shrunk down again. Over on the right-hand side here, we have the master output. So this is actually controlling nothing. before I do that, let me just talk about the architecture of the strip. We have, as I mentioned in the slide, the idea is you have the signal flow coming from the top through the bottom. So starting at the top, we have a track name, a mixer group, which I won't mention. We have input where we can set where we're taking input for this particular track. This brings up a little dialogue that shows us the various jack applications. We have ALSA, ADA, and we have XMMS running right now too. So we can connect to any of these ports that we want to. Polarity switch, solo, mute, automation, which it looks like I'm going to run out of time for because this is so badly planned. We have the predirect area down here, pre-fader redirects, gain control, post-fader redirects, panning, and output. And this is really not what I wanted to show at all. Let me just check where this is connected to. This is going to the bus 2. Alright, so now the fader. This is the master fader for sort of all the output. We can control things from there. What I was doing was we changed the routing of that and send this track through another bus. We'll send it through bus 2. So the signal is now, the signal from that track is now being sent to the purple track, which is a bus, which has a bunch of plugins on it. One of which will just turn on. This is a VST plugin. Did I turn it on? Yeah. That's interesting, it doesn't actually go to... Oh, it only goes to minus 20, right? It's a very subtle EQ. But it does work. Really. So this is an example of, you know, how you would apply global effects to things. We can have effects on buses instead of on tracks, and therefore we can route several tracks to a bus and apply the same effects to all of them. One thing that's rather interesting that you can do because we're using jack, I'm just going to stop this a minute. Instead of a plug-in, but we're going to put an insert in here. And when I go back to my other window, okay, where's the preset free key? Okay, so. So I'm now going to create a port insert that actually sends the data coming through this bus out to Freak Tweak and then back again. That's right. Pardon? To the right? Oh, I can't see, thank you. I can't work on this screen. Okay, so we now have a port insert set up. Pardon? Yeah. Where are we? Connections. Disconnect, free tweak. The window, my time is almost up here. And then let's turn, so if we play now. Can't hear anything. But if we go back to Freak Tweak, we can actually see that we've got the signal. Well, what should this do to the signal? Will we be able to hear it on this? My inserts are broken. This is what you get for staying up until 3 o'clock at night to try to make it work. Did I actually turn it on? Where are we? I guess my inserts are broken. sorry about that too. This is pathetic. See if we can do panning. Okay. Well, we can at least show the new panners in the minute or two I have left. Each input to a particular track has its own panning control. If you have a stereo track with two inputs, they have independent panning, so that you can mess around with the stereo width. Right now, that should have sent everything over to the right. We can bring everything back into the middle, so we lose all stereo width completely. We can spread things all the way back out again. We can do the same on all of them. I don't think I'm going to have time to do automation, which is too bad. Although that would probably break as well. So, just looking through my list of other things I was going to try to show. I think since it's 11:40, I'm actually going to stop and just take questions from people. If that wasn't my demonstration, I might have left. But fortunately, it was my demonstration, so I'm still here, and now you can ask me questions.
First of all, I take some bit of responsibility for some of the crashes. Paul tried to work on his code last night in my flat, but I kept asking some questions about how it works, so I
decided. Yeah, it's all Frank's fault.
I'm sorry.
God, man.
Okay, any questions from you? I guess there are some, like Fons Adriansen.
Thank you. Is there any limit of number of channels in a strip? Could you, for example, have a 4-channel Ambisonics B format strip?
Yeah. And in fact, the recent redesign of panning, in the back of my head, I had in mind that we would be able to use the Ambisonics plugins as panning plugins, and you could just have 4 channels coming into them, and it would then output to, I'm not sure what Ambisonics outputs to, but yes.
You need 4 channels.
You need 4 channels out, right. So it's certainly possible to do that.
The panning would be done by the plugin then?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Thanks.
Another takers? Yeah, right in the middle. This room is too large.
Actually, 2 questions. The first one, what the VST plugin, are they running Vine or is this natively using Linux binaries?
I guess you weren't here a couple of days ago. I did a talk on the first day here, and they're using some new technology that Torben Hone and I have written that runs them natively on Linux. And they're running in the same process space as Ardour. There's no penalty for using them. The execution time is identical to what you have on Windows.
Okay, wonderful. The other question, you probably don't like the question. what about MIDI support? It's for some components,
yeah.
It's crucial to have some sequences support as well.
We do want to add it, but it's not going to happen before we release version 1. We have the architecture in place to add new track types. I can't show it here because it requires software I don't have, but we already have support for image tracks, for example. And adding a new track type itself is not that difficult. So in fact, adding support to playback a MIDI file, the most primitive type of MIDI sequencing, although it's what Pro Tools started with, I would point out. Their first MIDI sequencing was nothing more than playing a standard MIDI file. That's something that we could add very quickly. I don't want to do that too quickly, because if you want a real MIDI sequencer, you need a lot more than playing back a MIDI file. It's certainly part of the plan. I think to comment briefly on what's about to happen to Ardour, because I didn't really have time. We are hopefully fairly close to a feature freeze. I hope in the next week or two we'll get to a state where we don't plan to add any more features before 1.0 unless they're required to fix problems in the user interface. And I think there will be some additions for that. We have some notable usability issues that will require new dialogues and so forth. But we'll hopefully go into a feature freeze, and I'm hoping that maybe a month or so after we do that, we'll be at a point fairly close to being able to release at least a candidate for 1.0. Once we get 1.0 out, the immediate task after that is to port the whole thing to GTK2, which is a different GUI toolkit. Not very different than what we're using. but it's not an overnight job. I think probably a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks to get the whole thing done. After that's done, then the door opens up to things like MIDI support. And I think MIDI support will probably be probably number one on the list of things to do at that point, possibly number two. So it's definitely a high priority, and our goal is to provide something pretty about as rich as something like Cubase SX offers. You know, the whole piano roll stuff, note list editing, the whole thing. But it'll be a little while.
Okay. Couldn't one use a workaround for somehow using the MIDI time information?
Well, it's possible right now. Actually, I don't know if it's how well it works, but because we're using Jack, if you use a Jack-enabled MIDI sequencer like Muse or Rose Garden, in theory, you could run both of them simultaneously side by side, and they should run in sync with each other. Somebody said last week that they tried the newest version of Rose Garden that was supposed to do that and wasn't doing it very well. And I don't know at the moment if that's Arda's fault or Rose Garden's fault. I think for some people that will be acceptable. And in fact, for some people that might even be desirable, because maybe they feel very comfortable working with Muse, or they like Rose Garden and they know it very well. Maybe those programs are going to have features that Arda won't have for a year and a half. And that might be a good way to work. I think for other people, the lack of integration of the two worlds, the audio and the MIDI world, will be just a complete pain and will feel like a very cumbersome way of working. Oh, I go to this program to work on MIDI and this program to work on audio. So we really do want to add MIDI, but my feeling has been all along that the audio is much more difficult than the MIDI just because of the data rates. You know, all the real-time stuff is hard to do for audio. Real-time stuff for MIDI is, relatively speaking, rather easy. So I don't think it'll be particularly hard to get us to, say, a 50% of SX level. It might take a while to get us to 90% of SX.
Okay, I'm sorry we are a bit late. So with all of your planned work on bug fixing, MIDI integration, GTK2 port, don't forget the most important stuff, the documentation writing. So more about that. I'm a bit sorry, but we have started slightly late, and I try to avoid more delays, so we take one more question from beyond the walls of the ZKM.
Hi, this is Sebastian, and I'm asking for, sorry, this is Luke Jelovic. No, I'm sorry. his question has actually been answered. Alex Timmer from Prague, does Arda have Lash support, and if not, do you see any need for it?
It doesn't have Lash support right now. I've said to Bob Ham while we were here that I haven't been particularly convinced by the idea of Lash in the past. But I think while we've been here, he and Steve Harris have convinced me it's probably a good idea. And so I think we'll probably add it, but since Lash doesn't actually exist in a particularly useful state right now, I mean, Bob has talked about lots of changes to the API and so forth. Once it gets to a stable point where we can use it, I anticipate adding it, but it doesn't support it at this point.
Okay, so I think that has to be all for now. For further questions, Paul is still available outside until tomorrow evening or even Monday morning. For now, thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
And then our next talk in this room will be in about 10 minutes, Stefan Kersten on the status of the Super Collider port. At the same time, in the lecture room across the hall, will be the beginning of a two-hour session by Jörn Nettingsmeier and Steve Harris on audio engineering in a nutshell. Thanks.